Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your source for everything new and noteworthy in the world of food. I'm your host, Kara Rota. We are joined today by Kathy Saul and Josh Serrano from Teens for Food Justice, an organization galvanizing a youth-led food justice movement. Thanks for visiting the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us today.
So, Teens for Food Justice not only trains youth in urban farming and nutrition and health outreach, you're also tackling issues of food insecurity in New York City. Let's talk a bit about the differences between food insecurity, food scarcity, malnutrition, and hunger. We hear these terms tossed around, but let's talk about how they intersect.
Well, food insecurity really kind of is the cause for all of these things. I think it's sort of at the root of all of these issues. If you live in a neighborhood that has a scarcity of resources for fresh, healthy produce and the raw materials for preparing a healthy meal at home or healthy prepared food options in restaurants, you are going to be experiencing food scarcity. You're eating a lot of calories, but they're pretty empty. And that's an issue that I think really relates to food scarcity. And certainly you are going to be seeing as a result of that malnutrition. And, you know, there is a very profound and counterintuitive relationship between people who are living in low-income communities and who are really not receiving adequate nutrition, but yet at the same time are very overweight. And those issues intersect because these communities are food insecure and there is a paucity of healthy food options available, certainly affordably, and not only just affordably, but at all. So,
one of the reasons that I think food issues are such a great place to start thinking about so many other topics is because there really is so much in there. Everything in our food system is affected, and everything in our food system affects everything else, from education to labor laws to the environment. Food issues have such a huge impact, especially on children and schools and communities. Tell us how Teens for Food Justice empowers change centered in those places and sort of how the organization's mission evolved to focus on teens.
Well, our organization always focused on teens because we started 8 years ago as an organization that was focused on catalyzing youth in meaningful and educative community service programming that connected them to social justice issues that were prevalent in our city and about which they were concerned, and giving them the understanding that they could be part of a movement for social change. So working with youth has always been fundamental to what we do. We actually then made the transition to focus on the food justice movement because we saw that the kids that we worked with were really concerned about this. They were really concerned about the fact that people are working multiple jobs, and yet they're not making enough money to pay their rent and have enough money left over at the end of the month to afford enough food to reasonably feed their families. That's called the meal gap, and that's a huge contributor to all of the issues around food insecurity and poor nutrition and the resulting health outcomes. So in many ways, the students and the youth that we were working with drove our focus on the issue itself. Not that we weren't already addressing it, but it really kind of laser focused us on that issue. The other area that young people showed us they were really concerned about was all of the environmental implications of our food system. And so, you know, the urban agricultural movement, community gardening, and, you know, just the ongoing concern about how are we going to feed our planet, you know, given the exponential growth of mankind and the increasing lack of available land in which to grow. So actually the kids led us to the focus on the issue. So it is most definitely a youth-led program.
The peer mentorship program is also such a unique part of the organization's mission. How does that work, and how do teens actually get involved in fighting around these issues?
So I think the peer mentoring component is important because it's important for students to be able to be guided and connect with folks who maybe come from similar experiences that the students are having, or with young people who are in the places where these students will be in the very near future. And so it's important to get those people to be directly involved with guiding the youth through the program. And so I guess I'll just talk about the advocacy project I worked on with the youth at Durban Assembly Unison School, where one of our farms is. So we did a food justice advocacy project through body movement, and it was a step performance. And so we were able to take something fun like dance or step and use it as a tool to combine, to spread, get our voice out about food justice issues that were most important to the teens. And so I think the youth mentor component allows for that. It allows for sort of this funky, fresh nature to be attributed to the program that allows it to really be focused on the experience of the students from these communities. And it allows us to find creative ways that we're able to connect and really get the point across and deliver program in a way that's not similar to how the experience they would get in the regular school day.
If you're stuck for ideas on how to develop your logo, website, or business cards, turn to creative minds from around the world via Design Crowd. Design Crowd is a website that helps businesses crowdsource custom graphics from over 500,000 designers worldwide. From social media graphics to flyers, menus, and even t-shirts, Design Crowd lets you get the perfect custom design every time or your money back. Rather than paying expensive fees and waiting weeks for an agency to pitch an idea, you can have exactly what you need within just 3 days. Simply post a brief describing the design you need, and within hours, you'll receive your first design to review. Then, once you've selected your favorite design, you'll be sent all the files you need to update your branding. It's that easy. And now, Clever Cookster listeners can receive up to $100 off their design project by going to designcrowd.com/clever. That's designcrowd.com/clever for a special $100 VIP offer for Clever Cookster listeners. Or simply enter the discount code CLEVER when posting a project on Design Crowd. One of the things that I really like about the term food justice, and I think also about the term environmental racism, is that it really focuses on the fact that these issues are not a coincidence. They're not things that happen because there's not enough food in this country. They're things that happen because of very systemic problems within the food system and distribution. Where does the term food justice come from, and how do you feel like having it in the title really helps teens think about these issues in a more political way?
So, you know, I think that the term food justice ties into all aspects of social justice. And so it's really about building an equitable food movement or an equitable approach to food. So our vision as an organization is that every human being has the right to be able to eat well and enough healthy food, that you shouldn't have to be making choices between other daily basic life functions, such as where you live, putting a roof over your head, you know, educating your children, clothing your family, and feeding your family, so that you end up making choices about what you eat based on how much money you have left over. That's a terrible way to live. And there are a lot of, it's not just the food system that has an impact on that. It's also living wage issues. You know, the $15 minimum wage plays into this issue. Gentrification and rising rents play into this issue. And these issues are centered on particular neighborhoods that have demographics and income levels. These are not coincidental. Giving voice to people, number one, who live in the communities that are directly affected by this, and from young people saying, this is not okay, and it's not going to continue into the next generation, we understand, right? We're going to break the cycle. We understand that this is the reality around us, and we're not going to tolerate that. We're going to break the system as it exists. We're going to figure out how to grow our own food. We're going to figure out how to find and access healthier food. We're going to lobby and move for bringing in healthy food retail into our community, because it's, you can't grow it all. I mean, it's just not feasible. It has to exist in other ways. You know, building coalitions around this. It's not a coincidence that so many organizations are involved in this movement. We're on a wave. We are riding a wave. You know, we're not alone in this, and that's a great thing. As an organization, we're partnering so many organizations and so many initiatives that are trying to address this issue. And I think that the other piece of it is also raising awareness among people who aren't affected by this issue that this is all around them. You know, it's all around us. And it's very important for people to understand the disparities, the interconnected disparities between access to so many services, food being one of them. I think that, you know, people who live in communities where these are not problems just really don't understand how prevalent they are just a few blocks away or a few subway stops away.
Well, I really love what you said about an equitable food movement. And I think, too, about the phrase intersectionality and like an intersectional food movement. That's so often when we think about the food movement in this country, we think about sort of the rise of California cuisine, the fetishization of produce, $13 avocado toast, and we don't really think that the food movement in some ways is not about local or organic or farmers markets. It's about the fact that there just is really no way to feed a family affordably and healthily in this country because of the system that we've set up. And so I think that there's so much focus on the food movement as we think of it affecting some people and really not enough paid to the ways that it affects many people much more drastically.
Yes, and I think that that plays into, you know, another issue and tension that exists within the urban agriculture movement, which is that as urban agriculture is scaling up, and particularly controlled environment agriculture, you know, profitability is based now on growing produce that isn't really a solution to changing the way people eat. It's focused on lettuce and microgreens and specialty herbs. That's where the profitability lies. That's where the margins are. And if what we are looking at urban agriculture to solve is healthy food access for the wider population, we have to be growing things that people can really cook and change their diet around. You know, we work very, very hard on making sure that we grow things like kale and chard and herbs and tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers, and that when we work with our students, we do a lot of cooking around healthy, affordable, plant-based meals that people can really eat and feel full and fed and also, you know, nutritionally boosted from. We work very hard with our program to map the community food profile, the landscape, the foodscape, and help and have our children lead education to their families and to the greater community about how you can shop affordably in the community to access healthy food where you need to go. You know, it's a real process, but this is like a really critical piece for the urban agricultural movement, and you know, all of the work that we're doing is really trying to address that as well.
I'd like to add something to that. So I think another conflict in the urban ag sort of food circles that you bring up in your last question is that I think there is a, on the one hand, we have terms like farm to table, right, that signify it's the knowledge about where the food comes from, and it's the knowledge of this type of particular green or herb or any type of produce that is really the impressive thing. And so I think by focusing on food justice generally, it's not just, hey, here's this green that you've never heard of, but it's about teaching you all the reasons why this is more a more nutritious option than this. It's the exposure to certain things that make you more empower someone to make a decision on their own, whether they like this or not. It's learning how to cook it so that, as Kathy mentioned, you can go into your own community, into your own home, and share that with others. And so it's more than just sort of the status thing you get as, hey, I'm part of farm to table, or hey, I'm local produce because everything local for the sake of local. You know, no, the reason why we identified local is because there are localities that struggle with food access, not because the idea of having food, consuming food that was produced locally is somehow better than other food that might be available. It's really about the lifestyle shift and in that a shift towards a more nutritious lifestyle, not necessarily a behavior shift of I used to eat this and now I eat this. And so I think that's what the focus on food justice allows us to do.
The history, too, of urban agriculture in New York is such a rich and interesting one, and there's many separate conversations to be had about the history of certain neighborhoods like Harlem and how community gardens played such an important role in changing those neighborhoods, and then the people who did that work were then no longer able to live there. What do you think that kids get from learning how to farm, especially kids who grow up in New York City and really don't have necessarily a concept of what a large-scale farm even looks or is like? What do they get from that? What's their reaction? What are the moments that are really exciting to them when they're learning about that work?
So, one thing that immediately jumps to mind for me is the STEM education in that. Our farms are completely hydroponic, and we have a small aquaponic system as well. But this is, you know, nutrient mixing to keep these systems running, where we're learning how to balance pH because that's essential to a hydroponic system running. And our farms are built by the students who are in the program and maintained by other students in the program. So it's sort of this sort of hardcore focus on real technical skills that you can then use in other fields, whether you get a career in food or agriculture or not. I think STEM education is something that we're all interested in expanding and targeting certain communities for those expansions, like women and students of color from challenged economic backgrounds. And so I think that the hydroponic farms provides that as a benefit on top of all the food and nutrition. And, you know, that's these sort of life skills that you develop by maintaining a farm of that skill or building a farm of that skill, or even the hardcore science and technology and math that you need to develop an affordable market to then sell your produce. I think those are skills that whether you're in food or whether you're in agriculture or whether you want to be an engineer, those are useful skills to you. And those are things that don't exist in a lot of the communities that we make sure to target and bring our farms to.
You know, this morning I was speaking on a panel at the New York City Food Policy Center, and Gail Brewer, our borough president, who's, you know, extremely supportive of hydroponics in schools and urban agriculture generally in New York and for school children, was saying, you know, the importance of, you know, gardening and farming programs for students from an entrepreneurial experience. And I think that that's really important. I think that we really see that with our kids. The process of being a part of Teens for Food Justice, of building this high-tech, high-capacity vertical farm, looking at design drawings, working together to figure out how to build it, you know, assembling these materials, these construction materials to make these growing machines that are growing, you know, 100 pounds of produce a month, you know, figuring out how they're going to distribute that, figuring out how they're going to talk to their peers about it, figuring out how they're going to make a presentation, like through the step presentation that Josh led yesterday, or the video presentations that the kids did on, like, healthy food marketing campaigns to their peers. These are entrepreneurial experiences. These are communication skills. They're collaborative skills. They're technical skills. They're, you know, business skills. They're financial literacy skills. This is a totally immersive experience that, you know, is preparing them for higher education, for, you know, professions, and the sense of confidence that they have, because it's really tangible. They built something, then they planted something in it, and then it grew, and then they ate it. They cooked with it. They ate it. They're sharing it with other people. They're getting this positive feedback loop. You know, the sense of agency that gives children is huge. It's really huge. We don't provide that very much in schools, so this is a, you know, a great, you know, benefit to their personal development, and particularly in communities where kids aren't being given a whole lot of opportunities, a huge opportunity to feel agency.
So how can people get involved in issues of food justice in their own communities? What are some of the things that you can do to learn more or take steps in that direction to contribute more?
Well, I mean, definitely one of the first things that you can do is find your local community garden, because usually your local community garden is not just a group of gardeners, but it's a group of, you know, activists. And so, you know, the political piece as well as the community piece is, you know, definitely going to be available to you that way. You know, I think that there's a lot that you can read. There's so much film content out there that is, you know, describing our food system, everything from farm workers' rights to, you know, food distribution and access. There are just so many different points on the compass that you can get involved with this movement through. Somebody shared with me the Real Food Challenge, which is a college program, basically, to help to get better food into the college setting, but also is really about food justice advocacy led by college students. They have created a wheel that shows all the intersectionalities around the food movement. I was looking at it the other day and just thinking, my God, there are so many touch points here, you know, for someone, depending upon like where their first lens is. The minute you get in the wheel, you're in the whole wheel, you know.
Josh and Kathy, thank you so much for coming to talk with us today.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a pleasure.
Check out the organization, Teens for Food Justice. They're doing really important work. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster, your source for everything new and noteworthy in the world of food.